Well, good morning. How's everyone doing this morning? Well, you don't sound convinced. That's all right. I'll do my best. Happy Father's Day to everybody here today. Who is wearing a, Fitbit step counter, pedometer, activity tracker? Who's got one on today? All right. Who's got the most steps so far? Anybody got 1,000?
3,110,000.
What? Wait, Connor, how many? What have you been doing? Can anyone beat Connor? How many? You already have 10,000? Jen, what are you doing with your life on Sunday mornings? You ran this morning? How far did you run? Well, 10,000 steps. Yeah. Wow. Well, congratulations. Anyone beat 10,000? Seriously, the first service, they applauded a guy that had only 128 steps so far today. There is a big difference between first and second service, right, Jacob? Man. Well, in case you're not aware, the average person takes about 5,500 steps per day. If you want some context to that, there are 1,576 steps to the top of the Empire State Building. So that's quite a distance, but only about 1,500 steps. Generally, it's as different for each person, some a little less, some a little more, but it's about 2,000 steps to go 1 mile, so you can kind of guess about how far Jen ran today. About 2,000 steps per mile. In fact, here's maybe some information that those that are really into step counting, because I think the goal is it's 10,000 steps, right? Jen, you can just lay down today, like you're done. The goal, I think people try to say, 10,000 steps is my goal for the day. Well, a few other numbers for you. You burn about 100 calories when you walk for 1 mile. 100 calories to walk a whole mile. So when you go out and you're like, hey, I walked a mile today, it's 100 calories. I mean, look at like your little Debbie or something and calculate out, what you have to do or not do to have that make a difference. In fact, if you want to lose 1 pound of fat, you then have to walk 35 miles or 70,000 steps, which is an entire week of getting 10,000 a day. So you can lose a pound a week if you never go over your calorie intake for people wonder why they don't lose a lot of weight doing the step counting. I'm just saying. Now, if you want to really make some progress stepping, you need to go to the Great Wall of China. Because to go the distance of the Great Wall of China is 26 million steps. You will burn 376 calories on that 13,000 mile plus journey, and it will take you 183 days to do it. I don't do it all at once, because it's 183 days, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at a pace of at least 3 miles per hour. So about half a year, you can finally do it, and you'll lose 376 pounds. 376 pounds. I said calories? You just have to interpret. I say all kinds of weird stuff up here. Especially when I'm doing the Bible reading. You got to really pay attention. So, you know what, though? But like in first service, the guy that everybody applauded for like only going like 150 steps, men pride themselves in going the least like amount of effort to accomplish whatever the task is. We have it like mapped out and figured out. It's a challenge to us to see how little we can do and still accomplish what we consider a great amount, especially considering how little we're doing to accomplish that amazing thing, whatever it is. Men are the ones that created things like escalators. There's no purpose for it. I mean, other than you want like automatic stairs. This is a guy's invention. The Lazy Boy chair. It's actually called a Lazy Boy chair. Men are the ones that invented things like remote controls. When I was in 6th or 7th grade, my best friend Kevin, I was sleeping over at his house. He's in the bed, I'm on the floor, because it's his house. And we wake up in the morning and we're like, let's turn on the TV. Now we're talking, this is back in the 80s, so TV was not remote control, at least in his room. Channel surfing meant you surfed your way over to the TV and you went click, 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 click. You had to like click on the actual dial, and his TV had a push button to get it on. So we're in bed, and we're arguing on who's going to turn the TV on. That turns into about a 15, 20 minute process of getting all kinds of objects in the room. We found some scotch tape and we're taping things together to get to be able to turn the TV on. We finally get something that will poke the TV and turn it on, and it's now on some stupid PBS channel or something. Arthur's on, I don't know. We've got to change the channel, but neither one of us will get up. So we're devising more things. Pretty soon, we're out of bed, we're in the garage. We've got a fishing pole, real tape, like duct tape. We've got the right stuff. 45 minutes later, we run in the house, jump back into bed, and we now have a tool that will turn the dial because neither one of us wanted to get up and turn the dial. Does this make sense to you? It does to me, because we invented an incredible, the first remote control ever was created right then. But we were just as pleased as could be that we had finally created this thing. So yeah, remote controls. Men have devised things like Velcro and figured out how to put it on shoes. This makes life so much easier. Or things like food delivery. I mean, who wants to like actually go eat out at a restaurant? Just drive it to me. I hope this isn't just going to one family. I can't even imagine how light any of that could be. That I don't know. I'm impressed. And he's wearing a mask. He's safety conscious. Online shopping, that's another great one. You know, just from your, you know, you can, did you know that you can shop at Hy-Vee online in your underwear? And they'll bring the food to your house, put pants on when they come, by the way. But it's free. I mean, as long as you get a certain amount, it's like $100 or something, and it's free. They'll just deliver it to you. I go in, and this is how a guy thinks. I go into Hy-Vee to do shopping, and as I'm going through, I see Hy-Vee employees like shopping. And I'm thinking, why are they shopping? They're in their Hy-Vee stuff. Like, shouldn't they do that on off time? And all of a sudden it clicks. That's for the smart guy who's at home right now, binging on Netflix, and I'm at the store. So yeah, you can shop online. GPS, that's a great thing. No more maps. This is Moses. Cross the Red Sea, turn right at Mount Sinai, reach destination, promised land, arrival time, 40 years. I brought a couple items. Well, first of all, this next one, I ordered this and it didn't come in time. And I desperately, desperately wanted to have this for you because to me, it's one of the most incredible man inventions. It is called a Candwich. This is for real. A sandwich in a can. It's brilliant. I don't know how many years it lasts, but I'm sure it's a decade. I can see myself on a Jeep trip taking one of these and tossing it on the intake manifold, you know, just driving along. I wouldn't do the peanut butter and strawberry, but that barbecue chicken. And if you look closely at the barbecue chicken, it's like a tube of bread that's, I'm sure it tastes terrible, but I just want to eat one. I wanted to open it here and eat it for you. But don't worry, they will come. And when they do, we will experience it. I'll figure out how to work it in. Here's another, a couple other cool little inventions. This one here, I mean, every guy likes a mug. This is just like a regular mug, but there's a difference to it, is this one has batteries in it, right? Because who doesn't need a mug with batteries? And what this one does is this is the self-stirring mug. Yeah. Because, I mean, what a waste of energy to do this. You get exhausted. Any big spaghetti eaters out there? Yeah, just round, just the right speed too. You don't wear yourself out eating spaghetti. You know, you eat spaghetti, you start sweating, you're tired, you know? Nope. You still got to get it to your mouth. We'll come up with something for that. How about these glasses? I'm currently looking at my feet. I can see my toes, I can see my laces. You see, this is for when you lay on your back in bed. Oh, now I can see all of you. Hi. Yeah, you just lay there. You don't have to put your head up or anything. You just lay there, and you just do whatever. Never move a muscle. If someone just worked that fork for you, you're set. Prism glasses, $14.99. These can be yours. So, yeah, come up, take a look at them. Interesting little doodads and gadgets that that guys have. Well, happy Father's Day, dads. I do hope that you acquire something like this for Father's Day because you deserve it. We are in week 3 of our Samson series. And Samson, of course, was a man with, with incredible potential, with a dangerously weak will. And he is in a mess. The very first week, we learned about a couple of attitudes that Samson had that was part of his problem. One was this idea of lust. I just want it. I don't care what the consequences are. There was a Philistine woman he was forbidden to be with, but he wanted her, and it started him down this path of destruction. We then talked about how he had this attitude of entitlement, like, I deserve it. And we kind of act that same way, like, yeah, it may be wrong, but I deserve it. I work hard, or I this, or I that. I should be able to have this. I should be able to have that drink. I should be able to go do this thing. Entitlement's a problem. And Samson was not supposed to touch any dead objects at all. And there was this lion that he had killed, and he went and touched the carcass. He kind of traded this plan that God had for his life for a handful of honey that the bees had made a hive inside this carcass. And so, but it's this entitlement. I deserve it. I should be able to have it. And then lastly, we learned about this idea of pride, where he says, I can handle it. He wasn't supposed to drink alcohol, but he threw himself a kegger. He wasn't even supposed to eat grapes, but yet he threw himself this alcohol-laden party as a wedding party for himself. But he can handle it. And I think we kind of have that attitude sometimes too, like, oh yeah, it may hurt others, but I can handle this. I can do this. I'll be okay if I do this. And then last week, we learned about how Samson, he was emotion-led instead of spirit-led. And as his emotions led him, his anger and his outbursts kind of wrecked everything around him, and he ends up kind of this pile of ashes at the end, instead of being led by the Spirit. And I think in our lives, we experience that too, where, you know, we let our emotions lead the way, and we don't like the end results of that, instead of letting the Spirit lead the way in our lives as well. Samson has so much potential, and his life just ends up in disappointment. And I think each one of us have so much potential that God has given us, but we're too much like Samson. We have a disappointment. We don't do things the way that we're supposed to do them. Now, when we left Samson last week, he was really realizing how badly he had messed up. I mean, here he is. He's sitting in a field. He's out of water. He's dehydrated. He's going to die of thirst, and he's just killed 1,000 Philistine men. He is public enemy number one. This guy is toast. And so he's sitting there, and he's just calling out to God for the first time, really calling out to God. And let's pick up the story, remind ourselves what happened. So Judges chapter 15, verse 19 and 20, it says, so God caused water to gush out of a hollow in the ground at Lehi. This is the water. He was dying of thirst, so here comes the water. And Samson was revived as he drank. And he named that place the Spring of the One Who Cried Out, and it's still in Lehi to this day. Samson judged Israel for 20 years and during the period when the Philistines dominated the land. So Samson cries out to God, and finally, in seeing his need for God, I think sometimes it takes for us guys, gals too, but guys especially, we have to hit a really low point in life before we realize our need for God. Because we're just kind of like, we'll do it on our own, we can handle it. And those really low points when we kind of call out to God, I think all of us are that way in one way or another. But as Samson calls out to God, God gives him this water. As he drinks it, he's revived. And that's an encouragement for us, that as we call out to God, that God also can revive us. Now, if you're not careful, you're going to skim right past verse 20. So many people that read the story of Samson, they go right past verse 20 and move on. But you've got to see what's happening in verse 20. Because as Samson calls out to God, as God revives him, Samson then nails it and gets it right for 20 years. For 20 years, he judges over Israel, which is the top-tier position. This is like the president or the king. Like, this is top-tier. And Samson is the judge over Israel for 20 years. And the implication here is that he's done well with this. I mean, he's done well. So he has this whole story that we've been reading of how he just continues to mess up. He has all this God-given potential with this dangerously weak will that just trashes everything around him. But now for 20 years, he gets it right. So this should be a celebration. This is like party hat, streamers, have a piece of cake. Like, Samson gets it right. But we're going to pick up the story now, and 20 years of judging Israel, Samson's going to blow it again. He just can't seem to stay in this pattern of getting it right because he's a man with so much potential. And with a man with this much potential, getting it right for 20 years, how could he be so stupid as to throw it all away? Well, this is how he did it. Samson didn't ruin his life all at once. He ruined it one step at a time. So if you're following along in the bulletin, page 6, there's some fill-ins. This is one of them. You'll see them, the yellow underlined ones. So he didn't ruin his life all at once, but he just did it one step at a time. It's not like all at one time he did it, but just a little bit at a time. And I think some of us are the same way. We mess up our lives. We don't do it all at once. We just do it one step at a time. Let's look at what happened here in Judges chapter 16, verse 1. It says, one day Samson went to the Philistine town of Gaza and spent the night with a prostitute. Judging Israel well for 20 years, then one day Samson started to take steps in the wrong direction. One day he decides to go to Gaza and just throw away 20 years of serving God for a 25-mile journey to a prostitute. Just one day. One day, everything changed. One day was not like the day before. One day was the day he started taking steps in the wrong direction. In fact, when you're reading through the Bible, you'll see this phrase come up again and again. One interesting place is with David and Bathsheba. When it's getting ready to tell the story of how David like totally blew it, it starts off the same way. One day. Just one day. I think we all can run into this problem. One day you start making decisions that will lead you to a place of destruction. One step at a time. For so many people, it's just that one day, that one step that starts moving in the wrong direction. They're here in life. Life is good. Family's good. Job's good. Everything's good. And then they take one day, they take a step in the wrong direction. Maybe one day they step into a casino. No, it's not bad to step into a casino. But that one step and another step, and you know, some money in the machine and some money on the table, and then you lose that money, and then you've got to figure out how to get more money, and it continues to take steps into an area that you find yourself, and you say, how did I ever get here? Well, you did it one day. And that one day, you just took one step. That might not have been a bad step, or the second step or the third step, but eventually you made your way to a place you didn't want to be. You know, it can be your finances. It can be your own marriage. You know? All of a sudden, one day, you lean into those affections or those paying attention to. You know, you complain, hey, at home, things are bad, things are stressful with the kid. But one day, you lean into that attention. You sit down, you have some coffee, or you send a text message. And then that turns into something else, which turns into something else, which turns into something else. Pretty soon, you've destroyed your marriage and your relationship. You wonder, how did I get here? Because just one day, you started taking steps in the wrong direction. It just took one day. One day you walked into a bar. It's not bad to walk into a bar. But one step and another step and another step, you find yourself in a place that you didn't want to be. Because Samson didn't ruin his life all at once. He did it one step at a time. Verse 2 says, word spread that Samson was there. So the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. They kept quiet during the night, saying to themselves, when the light of morning comes, we're going to kill him. So Samson has made his way 25 miles to Gaza, to the capital of the Philistines, and he's with this prostitute. They know he's there, and they say, we're going to lay wait for him. When he gets up in the morning, we're going to kill him. Okay? So this is the plan of attack. Samson's going to trade, again, that 20 years of faithfulness to God for a 25-mile journey to a prostitute. And you'd say, who is that stupid? And I think for most of us, we will find that there are times in our life when we say, hey, I've got a good marriage, good career, good family, good friends, good integrity. I've got a good heritage. I'm going to toss it all away, or I'm going to risk it all for one hit of sin, whatever that might be. We don't weigh the choice in that moment to all of what we have to risk in that moment. Samson had gained so much potential, but he was willing to throw it away, risk it on this 25-mile journey to this prostitute. Samson being 25 miles away, if we use our step calculator, how many steps is he? It's 50,000 steps. One step at a time, he wrecks his life. He had 50,000 opportunities to turn back and go the other way. 50,000 steps each time to calculate the risk of what he was doing. I mean, none of us ever wake up one day and just decide to wreck our lives, do we? I mean, not usually. We don't usually say, you know what, today I want to be completely broke. I want to be in debt up to my ears, never to be able to get out of it. Today I want to make all the financial stupid decisions I could possibly make and be completely in debt and slave to it. I want to never be able to pay my bills from now on. I want bill collectors to hound me day in and day out. This is the day. Who does that? People find themselves there, right? One step at a time. But you don't just wake up one day and decide this is how I'm going to be. Today is the day. Today I'm going to trash my marriage. Today, I wasn't thinking it before, but I woke up. Today is the day I'm going to just go have an affair. When I get home, everything's going to be wrecked. My wife's going to know about it. I'm going to lose everything. I'll be paying alimony. I'm going to lose everything I own. This is what I want for my life. Nobody wakes up saying that. Nobody wakes up and says, today is the day I want my kids to be ashamed of me. Nobody wakes up and says, today's the day I want to become an alcoholic. Today's the day that I want to be a drug addict. Today's the day that I want to lose all that is important to me. I don't think there's a person that wakes up and says, today is the day that I want to spend the night in jail. I don't want to sleep in my bed tonight. I don't want to sleep in my home. I want to sleep in jail tonight. Nobody wakes up and says, today's the day I want to be a sex addict. I don't want to have any meaningful, intimate connection with my spouse. I want destruction in this area. Because these are the steps that take place in which the pride within us says we can handle it. And it's a way of taunting Satan, saying, you know what? These steps along the way to the place that I don't want to be, I can handle this step, and I can handle this step, and I'm not going to end up over there. And it's taunting Satan, saying, I can dabble in these things, and I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay until you find yourself at the place where you think you can handle it, and then that thing is now handling you. It's a tough place to be. In fact, this was really Samson's issue, because Samson taunted the enemy. In fact, in verse 3, we'll see what this taunting looks like. He says, but Samson stayed in bed only till midnight. So he didn't go all the way till the morning like they thought he was going to. And then he got up, and he took hold of the doors of the town gate, including the two posts, lifted them up, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders, carried them all the way to the top of the hill across from Hebron. Okay, let me break this down for you. Samson, okay, the city is known, its protection, its fortification is known by the strength of its gates. So Samson, these guys are going to kill him in the morning. So he gets up in the middle of the night and goes to the place of their security, which actually the verse before talked about how these guys were sleeping. They were near the gates. He tears the gates off, including the post. They weigh about 700 pounds, puts them over his head, doesn't just put them in a pile right there, walks them up a hill. So he says, you guys are losers. You can't do anything to me. What you think you're protected against, you're not, because I can just tear these off anytime. And not only that, it's not even worth my time, because I can now carry them up a hill, throw them on a hill for you all to look at. He's taunting them. You can't do anything to me. I am Samson. I am better. I'm more powerful. I am more skilled. I'm more everything. I can handle this. You can't do anything can't do anything to me. I think just like Samson, we forget that the enemy is the devil. And the scriptures tell us that he is there to steal, kill, and destroy. He's looking to wreck your life. He's looking for you to take those steps in that direction so he can trash everything you have. In fact, the scriptures say he prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. He's just waiting. When is that day going to come when you're here and everything is good and you take that step here and you take a hit of this? Or you take a step here and you reply to a text or a glance or whatever it is. Or you take a step here and even though, you know, you have this restriction or this and that, you're going to ignore it. You're going to do these things anyways. Whatever it might be, what day will you do that? Because the day you do that, Satan is prowling around looking for someone to devour. In fact, on a side note, lion, many times in the scripture, is connected with the devil. And lions are in the category of felines, which are cats, which means that cats are the devil. So that's biblical. Check it out. Read it. See, Norma, you got to keep track of me, don't you? Well, this is a tough spot for Samson. I think it's tough for us as well. Because we can't put ourselves in the place of temptation and not expect that we won't fail or fall to that temptation. In 1 Corinthians 10:12, it says, if you think that you're standing strong, be careful not to fall. The minute you think, I got it all handled, be careful, because that's when you just might fall. Don't be cocky in front of Satan. Don't be cocky in the sin of this world. Always be on guard. Keep yourself pure. Live a holy life. Don't be willing to take one step in that direction. Don't let that day ever happen. That today, hey, it's just one step. It's not going to matter. It's just one step. It's just one step. Somewhere back there, it was one step. And you find yourself where you don't want to be. Samson rationalized the same sin over and over again. Remember before, when he was lusting, he wanted this Philistine woman. And here it comes again. He wants another Philistine woman. Even though the first one ended in disaster, you know, of course, he can handle it. Verse 4 says, sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah who lived in the valley of Sorek. So Samson falls in love with this late night radio DJ. He was probably making requests. Delilah. So we were like, what is he doing? It's nothing. This is the second time with this forbidden Philistine woman. And I think we rationalize sin just like Samson rationalized sin. It's why we keep doing it. Hey, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. I mean, everybody's doing it, right? I mean, if other Christians are doing it, it's okay for me to do it, even though I can see I probably shouldn't. But hey, if others are doing it, it's okay. I mean, my kids say it all the time, right? Everybody's doing it. Or sometimes we just say, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm doing well in this area, so, you know, we just kind of overlook this one. We say, I'm not hurting anyone, am I? I mean, what I'm doing doesn't hurt anyone else. I think that's a popular one for us, you know? Hey, it doesn't hurt anyone else. Probably the one that I hear the most from people that I visit with that end up confessing something is they usually say, well, nobody knows, so if it doesn't hurt them, then there's no problem. I mean, no harm, no foul. These are the things that we tell ourselves, so we rationalize the sin. Let me show you how this plays out for Samson. I'm not going to read these verses. I just want to tell them to you because it's kind of a long passage. But the men of Gaza then come to Delilah, and they say, hey, Delilah, we really want to know how to get Samson's strength, how to zap his strength. So we want you to coerce him and find out. And by doing this, we will each pay you $1,100 in silver, every single one of us. I don't even know how many of them there are, but more than one. There's a group of people there. All are going to pay her this amount of money each if she will find out how to weaken Samson. So she's like, I'm in. All good. So that night she goes to Samson. She says, hey, Samson, tell me, like, what can someone do that kind of zaps you of your strength? And so he says, oh, well, the way that you do it is you find bowstrings, like for a bow and arrow. And you find these bowstrings, and then you tie me up with them. But they can't be just regular bowstrings. They can't be cured yet, like stiff. They have to be in the pre-cured state. And once you do that, I'm just super weak, and you can overpower me. She's like, okay. So that night, she gets a bowstring. She ties him up, and he goes to bed. I don't know why. I mean, he just lets her, like, tie me up. And they go to bed. And then at nighttime, she has the men from the city, some of them hiding out in the house. And so at midnight, she's like, Samson, they're here for you. They're here for you. Just kind of see what happens. And what does Samson do? Wakes up. Breaks off the bowstrings, ready to conquer the world. And she's like, oh. She goes, you embarrassed me. That wasn't really how to weaken you. Come on, tell me how to do it. So the next night, he's like, all right, I'll tell you. He said, this time what you need to do is you need to get rope. Because if you get rope and you tie me up with, well, not just rope. We're talking brand new rope, like fresh from Ace Hardware. If you get that rope, tie me up, never been used, I'm just as weak as can be. She's like, sweet. She gets some Ace Hardware rope. She ties him up. And then that night, she does the same thing at midnight. Samson, Samson, they're coming for you. And he just busts through this rope. And again, she's made a fool. And she's like, Samson, come on. You're embarrassing me. Like you said, she's like, that's it. Seriously, I want to know. How do we weaken you? Or how do I weaken you? Or how do you just get weak for no apparent reason? Samson is obviously having fun with her because it's like he's looking around the room now. So he goes, okay, Okay, this is really how you do it. So I've got seven, my hair is braided in seven braids. He says, you take my seven braids and you weave them into this loom that makes fabric. And then when you weave it in, then you take the shuttle that you make the fabric with and you tighten the shuttle on it, and that's it. I'm toast after that. So she takes the seven braids of hair, she weaves them into the loom, she does a shuttle where it's supposed to go, and then they go to sleep. He goes to sleep with his head woven into a loom. I'm just trying to picture this. And then sure enough, midnight, she's like, Samson, Samson, they're coming for you. And like this loom is shattered, like the whole thing. She's completely made a fool of. And then we move on to verse 15. Then Delilah pouted. She's stepping up the game. How can you tell me I love you when you do, this is my Delilah voice, by the way, when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me 3 times in a row and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong. Boo hoo hoo. Now, before I go any further, I know that this series, been our man series, and I've kind of been like kind of tough on a lot of our guys, you know, trying to encourage us. And a lot of the gals have kind of missed out on that. I haven't gotten any emails, but I can sense that there's some ladies that are saying, you know, Pastor Doug, we need some conviction for ourselves here. You know, we need to kind of get hit with this too. So, I haven't got emails. I'm just sensing that. So, this next verse is dedicated to the ladies in the house. Verse 16, she tormented him with her, guys, say it with me, nagging day after day until he was sick to death of it. Well, if the shoe fits, I guess. She nags him. He can kill 1,000 men with a donkey jawbone, but when it comes to the nagging of this woman, it's what wears him down. He can't handle any more after this. I want you to know that as much as we laugh about this, I want you to know a truth, and I'm going to tell you this from a guy's perspective. I don't know what it's like to be a woman at all. But I do know 100% what it's like to be a guy. And I want you to know, ladies, that if you nag your husband, he will become aloof, he will distance himself, he will be detached, and he will just blend into the walls. And the reason being is because we're fragile, and we have egos, and that's why the scripture says to respect your man. Probably not even because he's earned it. Because if you treat us like boys, we don't like it, and we want to go to places where we're treated like men, even if that's in a negative environment. We want to be men. We don't want to be kids. And when a wife nags her husband, I want to challenge you with this. Is he becoming anything that you want him to become through nagging? He never will. But if you respect, if you honor, there's a better chance that he will become the man that you're nagging him to be. It's how we're wired. Well, this nagging just beats Samson down. Verse 17 says, finally, Samson shared his secret with her. My hair has never been cut, he confessed, for I was dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as anyone else. It seems to be there's just this moment here where Samson connects back again with his purpose in life. I was dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. That's really his purpose. For 20 years, he'd been nailing it as judge, but he's completely off base now. He's 50,000 steps in the wrong direction with this prostitute area and just a bad, bad situation. I think many of us forget who God called us to be. We're called to be something so much more than just whatever your job is. You're called to be so much more than a mother or a father. That we're called to love other people and to live out that calling to the hope of Jesus Christ. In verse 18, it says, Delilah realized that he had finally told her the truth, so she sent for the Philistine rulers. Come back one more time, she said, for he has finally told me his secret. So the Philistine rulers returned with the money in their hands. Delilah lulled Samson to sleep with his head in her lap. And then she called a man in to shave off the 7 locks of his hair. And in this way, she began to bring him down, and his strength left him. Samson messed up his life one step at a time. Not all at once, but 50,000 steps along the way. And I think Samson believes something that I think is one of the greatest issues in the American church today, and it's this. Samson assumed that his disobedience would never cost him. He just thought he could just continue to do his stuff and come back from it. He could just continue to do whatever he wanted, and somehow it would all end up being okay in the end. And I think too many times in the Christian church today, we believe that we can just do whatever we want and somehow it's going to be okay. I can have God here and I can look like a Christian and I can do Christian things, but over here, don't let Christianity touch this part of my life. I want to do what I want to do here. And we act like there's no consequences to this decision. There is this lulled kind of sleepy attitude when it comes to our faith that, hey, I want just enough Jesus to get saved, but not so much Jesus it wrecks my fun. And this is not the religion of Christianity. This is not what it looks like. It's wholehearted. Jesus says, pick up your cross. That's what devotion to Jesus looks like, sacrificing everything for the sake of another person, for the sake of the truth and the hope of Christ. Not just have enough Jesus to then ignore him and say, don't touch, don't get in the way, I just want to live my life. And we live in both of these worlds. Verse 20, then she cried out, Samson, and the Philistines have come to capture you. And when he woke up, he thought, I will do as before, and I will shake myself free. But he didn't realize the Lord had left him. So the Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced to grind grain in the prison. And I would say that if we live in this mentality that I just want just enough Jesus, whatever you think that might be, that yes, it's true that over here you've gotten away with it. You've been able to live your life and do your thing and act like sin does not impact you at all. That disobedience will never cost you anything. You might say, hey, nobody knows, but I want you to know sin will be discovered. You cannot expect to continue to cash these checks and it not be making significant withdrawals. Because that kind of lifestyle, you will lose out. You will lose relationships and jobs and family, your integrity and your honor. Because we think we can just get through it. Hey, I'm okay. You think you can just fool others with it all. We believe like Samson that we can just shake ourselves free. But you won't realize that sin will find you out. And as Samson discovered, because of these choices, the Lord had left him. Look, I really only care to do one thing here today. The only thing I care to do here today is not give a good sermon or, you know, do any biblical preaching. And I really only care to do one thing today, and that's change and transformation in myself and in us as a faith group. So I want to ask you this. This is my challenge, my question for you today. It's the only thing I want you to wrestle with today. Where are you stepping away from God? Where is it that one day you decide to take a step away from this place where God wants you to be? Where is the area or the areas maybe where you have taken a step away? And maybe another step. Maybe you're two or three steps down the road. Maybe you're all the way down here. Maybe you're at 50,000 steps. But where are you taking those steps away? And I want to encourage you that when you're on that journey, walking away from God, there's only one thing to do. If you're walking this way, what should you do? Stop. Turn around. And you know what's right here when you turn around? God. He's not back here. He actually journeyed with you. Because the whole time he says, come back to me. Return to me. I have goodness for you. I have a plan for you. I have a hope for you. Your life is meaningful. I created you for a purpose. There is something so much more amazing than this frivolous, fake life that you're living, that the world says this is what it's all about, and you buy it, and you listen to it, and you try to be it. And God says there's something so much greater. And at any point, step one, step 50,000, is to stop and to turn around and to embrace the Savior that's there. And he'll walk back with you. He'll journey you back. Back to the place of hope. Back to the place where he wants you to be. Back to the place of your purpose, your calling, your future. Back where there's meaning. Back where there's significance. Back where there's forgiveness. This is the place. Not that place. Satan's always tempting you to go. Come on, it'll be good. Come on, eat some fruit. Come on. It's just one drink. Oh, come on. It's just a few office supplies. Come on. It's just one image on the computer. I meet with a mentor a couple times a month. He means so much to me. And he'll say this to me at least once a month, and he's been saying this to me for years. He's in his late 80s now, and my heart already grieves the day I'll lose him. And he says to me, he says, Doug, you are only as strong as you're honest. It took me months to like figure out what the heck this old dude was saying. Doug, you're only as strong as you are honest. And that haunts me. It's usually followed up by this statement. Tell me one thing today that you don't want to tell me. And then you try to make your eyes not make eye contact, you know. He's a wizard. You're only as strong as you are honest. Look, if you're stepping away from God, you need to stop. You need to turn around. You need to go back. Because it's not too late. Because the moment you turn around, God will be right there. Samson is a loser. Samson has all this potential, and he just squanders it away time and time again. Even when he goes through 20 years of an amazing season, toss it away for some stupid prostitute, some stupid fling of sin. But here's the majesty of it. Verse 22. But before long, his hair began to grow back. Doesn't that sound like the stupidest verse ever? Of course it did. It just got cut. When you get a haircut, do you ever expect that's the last one? No, you're going to pay $14.99 or $28 or $130. I don't know what your haircut costs. Hopefully not that much. You're going to get another haircut, right? This is like the dumbest verse ever. Samson's hair got all shaved off. Guess what? It's going to grow back. Duh. Do you know why this verse is here? God says, Samson, your hair is going to grow back. The power was taken from you in your stupidity will return to you. It's going to take some time, but it will come back to you. You're not dead yet. He wasn't dead. You're not dead. I'm not dead. God's not done. And you may have done something stupid, but your hair will grow back. God will see to it. And you will fulfill. You will have the opportunity to fulfill the thing that God put you here for. As long as one day you don't start walking the wrong direction, you can always turn back. Let's sing.